Will the House please come to order? Representative Madden, you may have privilege of the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members of the House, I'd like to make my first introduction of the session. I'd like to have you meet this pretty girl up here. Her name's Regina West, and she's from Cheyenne. The reason we know her is because she's an employee of a local historic hotel that many of us stay in. And all of us down there that have been there the last couple of months have grown horribly fond of her. So she's taking pictures today, and give her a hand.
Welcome to the House. Thanks for taking care of some of our members. Representative Edmonds, you may have privilege of the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members of the 60th, just wanted to point out someone in the gallery, someone very dear to me. He's the reason that I'm here, so you can love him or you can hate him for that. No, it's not the senator. Sorry. Ladies and gentlemen, the man I respect more than anyone else, my husband, Harlan.
Ladies and gentlemen, there's a correction on the third reading vote on Senate File 12. In comparing the roll call printout to the audio, it shows that a no vote was counted as an aye, so Senate File 12 has failed to pass the House on a 30-30 vote. So Senate File 12 has failed to receive the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, and Senate File 12 has failed to pass the House. A little trivia. Today is square root day. 3 times 3 equals 9. The square root of 9 is 3, and that happens 9 times in a century. So feel lucky today that it's... What is the... 3-3. Okay, it's not the 9th. Today is the 3rd. Okay, I've got that. Yeah, whatever it is. Square root day. The second conference committee on Senate File 103 is Mercer, Chair, Peasley, and Throne. Senate File 103, Mercer, Chair, Peasley, and Throne. We're at that order of business of bills on third reading and final passage, regular list. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 88.
Senate File 88, introduced by Senator Perkins, an act relating to restricted driver's licenses, required use of ignition interlock devices, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Representative Hammonds.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I kind of like ignition interlocking devices, but if you'll recall yesterday on second reading, we had an amendment that the good speaker brought with regard to the length of the sentences and also dealing with the consent to being tested. And so what we found after this had been drafted and adopted is that it created some issues in terms of compliance. And so thanks to the good work of LSO, and also I just had a discussion with the agency that would be overseeing this, we have another amendment in front of you. And again, my apologies for on third reading have a lengthy amendment, but I do believe that this strengthens it and it gets us to a place where we don't create so many exceptions that we in essence eliminate the effectiveness of the bill. And so what I'm going to do is walk you through those and so that you have a clear understanding of what we actually have in front of us.
Representative Hammonds, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Madam Majority Whip, would you please come up?
Oh.
Thank you. Please proceed, Representative Hammonds.
I also need to move Senate File 88 Amendment, third reading number 1 amendment, which I hadn't done. So.
Please proceed, Representative Hammonds.
Thank you, Madam Majority Whip. On page one, what we've done is we've restored the lines that were taken out previously. We'll be keeping those, and that's because we're also going to be restoring some other parts of the bill. And so this is a conformity in order to do that. And then on page three, this isn't on the amendment, but I just want you to know that page three were the changes we made yesterday. We're keeping those in place. Those are not being altered in terms of the judge having discretion. Instead of it just being 1 year on first offense, you have your 3 months to 1 year, et cetera, for the varying amounts for the other ones. And then as you go on, where we begin to have changes with this amendment are on, it's on page 6 and 7. And this is where you get into the portion on testing to determine the alcoholic or controlled substance content of your blood and the suspension of your license. Yesterday we took those out and we're going to bring them back in. And what we've done, we have a unique situation in that current Wyoming law says if you refuse to be tested, that your license will be suspended on your first offense for 6 months. For the other offenses, second offense and on up, your license is suspended for 18 months. Now, as you recall, what we do in this bill is that we put the ignition interlock device along with your restricted license on first offense only if your blood alcohol content is 0.15 or higher. So you can see how we have a discrepancy in there. If you refuse to be tested, you'd automatically be assumed that you were at a 0.15. And so this is what we've taken care of, and this is what we've done with the amendment before you. On your first offense, if you refuse to be tested, what it does is we keep the status quo. And so the net result of that is your license is suspended for 6 months, but you, if you want to drive because your license is suspended, you can't drive whatsoever. You may request that you obtain an ignition interlock device. If you get the ignition interlock device because you've requested it, then you'll have a restricted license and you would be able to drive during those 6 months. And then what we have next is on your second offense, if you refuse to be tested, this is where we have a change with our new adoption of the new law and this amendment, is as current law says, your license would be suspended for 18 months and the provisions of the mandatory interlock ignition interlock device would apply. So on your second offense, you would have what we currently have, which is an 18-month suspension, but it loops you back into the mandatory interlock ignition device. And so you could only, it's mandatory. If you're going to have this suspension, you'd get a restricted license, and you would have to have an ignition interlock device on your car. The reason being, on your second offense by then, what we're saying is we don't want people to go around with suspended licenses and then they just go ahead and drive anyway. We're saying you have to have an ignition interlock device. And so that's what this amendment before you does. And then at the end of it on the last page where we have a repealer, that actually just adds conforming language so that all of those portions work together. So that's what we're trying to do, is to make sure that we do not create such a loophole that everybody in the state would be refusing to be tested because it would guarantee that all of them wouldn't have an ignition interlock device. And if we keep the current language, which we adopted yesterday, that would be the unfortunate result. If you're interested in the second or subsequent suspension, that's on page 10. We're going to keep that back in and change the language. So that's how it would work. If you want me to walk through it in more detail, I could. But I think that is the gist of what we're trying to do on this third reading. So I stand ready for questions or comments from anyone.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Madam Majority Whip. On and for the amendment, I got it right this time. But the thing that concerned me the most about the way the bill is written on the refusal to take a test, it was the one-year automatic interlock device. When the suspension that goes with that can be anywhere from 3 to 6 months on a first offense, and I don't find that particularly fair. I think the way this amendment reads, it will both encourage people to take the test because if you're below 0.15, you don't have the interlock. And if you're if you refuse to take the test, you can then ask for the interlock device too, which is a little better than having just a suspended license with a probationary license. So I think this achieves both ends, and I would urge you to support the amendment. Thanks.
Anyone else for their first time? For their second time? We are now voting on third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 88. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no. Third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 88 has been adopted.
Chairman Landon.
Mr. Speaker, I move third reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 88. Ladies and gentlemen, what this goes to is that part of the bill where it was where the body was considering whether or not the cost of obtaining and using this device would be paid for funds made by the state or paid by the individual, and that was quite a lengthy discussion yesterday. And on the one hand, I heard that some argued that this should be one of the consequences of your being guilty of this. And on the other hand, I heard that it should not be so punitive as to be ignored by the individual, and so that they would drive without regard to this or under suspension, that wasn't what we wanted either. So this amendment is to recognize that the individual who's done this has some responsibility on their part to help pay for this, and yet if they are providing for a family, if they have an entry-level wage, or if they have food stamps, then the state will help pay part of that device and the maintenance for that. So this amendment just proposes to split that 50-50 for those low-income individuals who are going to be required to have this ignition lock device.
Anyone else for their first time? Representative Hammonds.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. With regard to this, I think it's a good compromise. I know many of you don't want the state to be paying anything for individuals who find themselves in this situation, but you still have to deal with the fundamental question is, if people don't have the money to pay, it's a real dilemma. And I don't think it's unreasonable for them to pay $1 a day, which is what this works out to, for them to be involved in it. But I also think it recognizes the other issues in their lives in terms of the financial responsibilities that they have. Hopefully, at the end of the day, what we will find is that this bill keeps drunks off the road, that it keeps all drunks off the road, no matter what their financial status, and that all of us are safer as we're going around because we're able to do this. I will be voting for this amendment, and I would encourage you to do so also.
Anyone else for their first time? For your second time? We are voting on third reading amendment. I'm sorry, Representative Peasley, were you? We are voting on third reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 88. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Third reading amendment number 2 is passed. Senate File 88 having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Yeah, excuse me. The question is, shall the bill pass? The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bagby.
Aye.
Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Brechtel.
No.
Brown.
Aye.
Buchanan.
Aye.
Byrd.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Carson.
Aye.
Childers.
Aye.
Cohey.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Davison.
Aye.
Dirks.
No.
Edmonds.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Gilmore.
Aye.
Gingery, Goggles,
aye.
Hales,
aye.
Hallinan,
aye.
Hammonds,
aye.
Harshman,
aye.
Harvey,
aye.
Illaway,
aye.
Yagi,
aye.
Jorgensen,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Lockhart,
aye.
Lubno,
aye.
Madden,
no.
McKim,
aye.
McComey,
aye.
Mercer,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Miller,
aye.
Millen,
aye.
Moniz,
aye.
Patton,
aye.
Peasley,
Pedersen,
Peterson,
aye.
Philp,
aye.
Korberg,
aye.
Roscoe,
aye.
Simlek,
aye.
Shepperson.
Aye.
Stewart.
Aye.
Stubson.
Aye.
Teeters.
No.
Thompson.
Aye.
Throne.
Aye.
Throne.
Aye.
Wallace.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Peasley. Aye to no. Hammonds. Aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 54 ayes, 6 noes.
Senate File 88, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, Senate File 88 has passed the House. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 98.
Senate File 98, introduced by Senator Geis, an act relating to the regulation of traffic regarding fines for speeding trucks, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Representative Chairman Semlick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 98 and will withdraw it at the appropriate time. Members of the House, I'm not standing before you to for my intention to be an obstruction to safety on our highways, and I'll try to make that case a little bit later. I'll tell you, I have no direct connection with the trucking industry. It's not a family business for me. It's got some. So that's not the reason I'm here. I just want to talk to you for a little bit about, and hope you will recognize, as I do, the value and the importance of trucks, truck drivers, truck owners, for the delivery of the products that keep our economy in Wyoming moving. It's nearly impossible for any of us to think of anything that's around us, anything that we purchase in terms of consumer goods, that's not being moved by our trucking industry. So I guess I would also go on to say that the men and women who operate trucks on our public roads are the most experienced drivers on the road. These drivers can put on 150,000 to 200,000 miles a year, that's probably 10 times more the mileage that we do. So they really do have a lot of experience. The operators and truck drivers that are referenced in this bill with the rate rating of 2,600-pound GVWR or greater, they're required to apply for a test for a commercial driver's license. I do have a commercial driver's license, but it's not because I'm a truck driver or have a trucking business. I have one because I drove a passenger bus at one time. So I know that the test is very comprehensive and requires the applicant to be tested in several areas, particularly if you're looking for special endorsements for the CDL. And some of these endorsements also require a medical exam. So there's just a lot that goes into this. The equipment that the truck owners and drivers operate, I would contend, are the most safety-regulated vehicles on the public highways. Truck drivers, owners, operators, they're required to perform a twice daily check of their tractors and their trailers. This walk around includes check of the tires, they check the brakes, they check the lights, they clean the lights, the taillight lenses, the headlights, far beyond what the rest of us do in terms of making sure that the equipment that they operate out on the public roads are safe. But in spite of these safety precautions, accidents involving trucks are still unavoidable. So, members of the House, I'd like to direct your attention for just a moment to a handout with Senate File 98 on top of it. It talks about the injury crashes, 2007 injury crashes. This is the case that I want to make to you in regard to really the safety record of these trucks. And I want to particularly emphasize the portion of the charts that talk about the estimated vehicle speed of the 66 mile per hour or greater, because that is what is in question here in terms of the provisions of Senate File 98. So in the first category of passenger cars, on the far right-hand column there where it says 66 plus, that, again, this is injury crashes, the type of vehicle is passenger car, and if you look at that relative as a proportion of the total vehicle speeds reported, there's 557 down the bottom of that column. That represents passenger cars with injury crashes of driving 66 mile an hour or greater in terms of reported speed. That comprises about 50% of the accidents out there. You put throw pickups into that category, you got another 158 in 2007, and that picks up another 28% for a total of about 80%. 80% of the injury crashes reported in 2007 as a result of passenger cars and pickups. You go on down the column there, you'll pick up the tractor trailer. You'll see there was 51 out of 557. That represents about a little over 9%. So we've got about 80% in the passenger cars and pickups. We've got 9% in the tractor trailer category. You look at the semi-tractors only, that gets down to just, well, in fact, there isn't any there. Okay, moving on down to an unfortunate thing we have to look at for just a moment here is the fatal crashes in 2007. Here again, the passenger cars and the pickups, I've summarized those percentages down the bottom lower right-hand corner of your first chart there, or the first page of that chart. Tractor trailers comprised about 11.9% of those. The passenger cars and pickups, as a composite, that ends up being about 70%, and motorcycles 5%. So there again, the emphasis of this bill is to increase the fines for trucks that are speeding that are in that 26,000 weight range. Here's some evidence here to suggest that maybe that is not warranted. The second page of 2007 property damage of crashes, again, this is, again, looking at the 66 mile an hour or faster of the reported speeds. The evidence there would indicate that in the passenger car and the pickup category, includes about 80% of the property damage as a result of those vehicles, and only 13% has to do with tractor trailers or semi-tractors. So that's the evidence in support of why I would suggest that we might be somewhat misguided in going forward with this bill. So why are we considering Senate File 98? Again, the bill proposes to increase the fines for speeding of speeds exceeding 6 miles an hour from the current $100 to $300. Members of the House, I just personally feel this is an unjustified target and a narrow attack on our trucking industry. I would personally feel safer with an experienced truck operator driving with the safest equipment on the highway exceeding the posted speed limit by 6 miles per hour than I would with any other driver that might have limited experience driving a vehicle with potentially very limited safety requirements. Maybe truck drivers text message on the road while driving. Perhaps they do not. I just don't know. But I know for a fact that drivers in smaller vehicles commonly will text while driving. So, members of the House, for this reason, I will not support this bill, and I urge caution in targeting this group of drivers and set them apart from all other drivers to be subject to the provisions of this bill.
Representative Palin.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would urge the House to resist this amendment. Well, I guess the amendment and support the bill. These fines, this extra $100 fines for trucks that are going on the interstates where it's 75, they have to be going 81. On the secondary and primary roads of 65 miles, they have to be going 71. The reason, and I would, and I appreciate my good friend from up in the area where I come, I have a ranch up there near Hewlett. My good friend from up that direction, I appreciate the chart, but I don't really quite understand the chart in the sense that I don't know if these fatalities are of the individual driving the vehicle, or does it include the people they crashed into, who perhaps the truck driver was driving a truck and the person who was in the passenger car was driven into by the truck, and the death or the injury would only reflect what vehicle that person was driving. In other words, it doesn't say who was responsible for the accident. And the numbers there, I think, are indicative of a lot of accidents that are happening with these big trucks on the 2007 property damage. Actually, the percentage for tractor trailers and semi trailers only is 12.7 of the total of 1,080. So I don't know whether these are the injuries of the driver only, or the perhaps so if a truck ran into a passenger car, the person in a passenger car would be listed as a passenger car injury, even though he was run into by a truck. So the issue really isn't, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Speaker, the issue isn't really the good truck drivers who are going within the speed limit. The issue is those ones who are driving in excess of the speed limit, who are not good truck drivers. And that's what we hear about from our constituents when they are exposed or driving down a road with a speeding truck next to them. A speeding truck in dangerous areas in particular. And one of the things about this bill that is corrected, or that corrects the current statute, is the issue of the superintended zones. And by a glitch in the previous law, a superintended zone, probably a lot of you don't even know what a superintended zone is until you get a ticket there. But there are certain areas in our state where they are particularly dangerous, and the highway department has indicated a lower speed limit. And one of those is between Laramie and Rawlins, for instance. There, instead of the 75-mile-an-hour speed limit on Interstate 80, it's 65 miles an hour. And on that, because of a glitch in our current law, a truck can be going 22 miles over the speed limit and have a fine of only $330. So potentially they could be going 87 miles an hour. They can be going 10 miles an hour or 9 miles an hour over the speed limit, 74, and their fine would only be $60. So this is something that needs to be corrected. The current fine, the current extra fine for going 6 miles an hour over the speed limit is an extra $100. That $100 has been the fine for the last 25 years, or 20 years. $100, 20 years. The department, and I've conferred with them, and our chairman has conferred with them, feel that in order to provide a sufficient deterrent to these bad truck drivers, not the good truck drivers, the bad truck drivers who are going in excess of the speed limit, in order to deter them, we need a bigger penalty. The $100 is not what it used to be. So, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Speaker, I would request that we would resist this amendment and support the bill. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to point something out on and against the bill that was brought out last time, but I don't think the body was paying close attention. One of the things that I'm very concerned about this bill is that it also includes combination of vehicles with gross vehicle weights of over 26,000 pounds, which means if I have a heavy-duty truck, a normal truck that has a GVW of 16,000 combined with a 32-foot trailer that's an additional 10,000, I'm at that $26,000 threshold. So this is not only truckers. You're also dealing with localized producers and other people that might just be driving a normal truck and trailer, and the body needs to be aware of that.
Representative Pedersen.
Mr. Speaker, I rise in support of the amendment, and I'll tell you why. We've had multiple times in this session that we have had testimony that has told us that it is not, in fact, the size of the penalty that is the deterrent. It is, in fact, the assurance that the penalty will be enforced that is the deterrent. If you truly want to stop speeders, then you we get more highway patrol, and we pull them over every 20 miles all the way along I-80. and then that will stop the deterrent because he just got pulled over 20 miles ago, and now he's happening again. You can make this 100, 300, 1,000, but if you don't think you're going to get pulled over, it's not a true enforcement issue. The dollar amount is not the issue. It's the assurity of whether or not that deterrent will be enforced, whether or not that is a deterrent.
Anyone else for their first time? Chairman Cohey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, on and against the amendment and for the bill. You know, I have nearly a daily contact with about 35 people that will just love this bill. Actually, they won't. And some of them are my constituents, you know, people that on one hand I'll have to answer to, and I certainly will in my own inimitable way. Why would they be offended, and what does that say? Some of the discussion I hear today say that, it's because of the size of the weight, that maybe that should be exempted or eliminated somehow. To do what? Go faster than 6 miles an hour than the posted speed limit? What does that say about what we're hearing here today? I suppose the only people truly offended by the contents of this bill have suffered what they may believe to be a gross offense in the form of a ticket. What does objection to this bill say? I suppose that it says there are some belief that the current speed limits are too low. I know people that have been offended by this law, and shouldn't they be? If you're driving more than 6 miles an hour above the speed limit, shouldn't they be? Shouldn't all of us be? I drive down here probably 6 miles an hour more than 5 miles an hour, more than what the posted speed limit is, and tend to cram on the brake every time I see a highway patrolman. I'm glad they're not up here today for the sake of this conversation. There's a chart that you all have that shows those that have been apprehended for going too fast. The issue is they've been apprehended for going way too fast, and that's what the discussion of this is. The bill says the high fine will begin at a point 6 miles per hour in excess of the posted speed limit. Now think about that. What that says is the higher fine will not start until you are going more than 71 miles an hour, 70 miles an hour, more than 70 miles an hour in a 65-mile zone. Is that unreasonable? The bill says that you have to be going faster than 80 miles an hour. Now this is with a chunk of metal and contents in a highly compact package of 40 tons, possibly more. That you could go up to 80 miles an hour in a 75 mile an hour zone, and you have a low or maybe no fee, just a warning. Who knows? But in excess of that, you're going to get a pretty good fine and probably ought to. The numbers on the chart do not show the cataclysmic event that 40 tons of mass multiplied times velocity can do. There's a few engineers out here, one of them right in front of me in this room, that can give you a technical impact calculation, but the proof bears out that these things are designed to travel at the speed limit set and little more, maybe 6 miles an hour more. Engineering of the particular section of road takes in all kinds of consideration: terrain, curvature, pavement ability, the super built into the highway, compared to the equipment that travels on it. Mr. Speaker, I'm in favor of the bill and against the amendment.
Anyone else for their first time? Representative Carson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would agree with my good chairman from transportation, and I just want you all to think about an accident that you've seen with a truck and how much mass there is and what it can do to another vehicle. About 6 years ago in Laramie, I'd gotten done with dinner with my family in the local restaurant, and I saw a line of cars headed out of town and to go see the show. And the show was that there was a construction going on the interstate, and a truck had been going way too fast down I-80 coming down the hill into Laramie. And grandparents had taken their two kids from another state to visit Wyoming to be tourists here and to see, I think they were headed up to Yellowstone. And when I see this bill, I can't even tell you what the bill number is, but I can see what was left of this RV. And it was one of those RVs you rent, pretty good size. And when this truck came down, I think they estimated it was going about 82, and it hit the back of this thing, and this thing was stopped underneath the bridge around a left turn corner. This RV was sort of like when you drop a piano on someone in the movies. There was nothing left. It's just sort of poof. And I always think about that when I read this bill, and I just, it's an inherent responsibility when you have something that's this large. So I think this will help deter those trucks momentum is 1/2 mv squared, so mass and velocity squared, you know, you can just think of the damage it creates on another vehicle. So I would urge you to resist this amendment and support the bill.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just sitting here thinking, why all the concern? Why don't we just drive the speed limit and obey the law? That's kind of what we're saying, so I'm for it. Thank you.
Anyone else for their first time? For your second time? Chairman Cohey?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen, like anything, laws that we see here are often brought because of the bad behavior of a very few. Through the years, bills like this have been brought before this legislature by people in the industry, people that, just like me, that own companies that that understand what these things can do, that know who knows better than most the laws of physics and what that mass and weight can do. And if you ever see it, you'll know it. To other people, and particularly to property and to residents of this state, I want to know that when my family and my friends, those of you in this room, are on the American highways, one of the most dangerous workplaces in the world, that they are safe. And if this is part of that grand plan to make it that way, then so be it.
Representative Hallinan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I thought it would be necessary just to maybe take issue with one of the comments, and that is that it didn't seem to matter how high the fine is. And I think it does matter. Otherwise, why do we have these graduated fines for the various traffic violations? So I think it is important. If I was to get a $300 fine, I think I'd think pretty carefully about exposing myself to that possibility. So against the amendment, Mr. Speaker, and for the bill. Thank you.
Anyone else prior to the sponsor? Representative Semlich.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members of the House, thank you for the discussion. I guess I'm still perplexed by what problem we're trying to solve here. If you're not persuaded by the arguments, you know, at least be moved by the data. I think the crash data is pretty clear that the vehicles that is targeted in this bill are not the ones causing the problems out there. And I again would feel much more comfortable with a driver with a lot of experience with driving equipment that's very safe than I would some of the others, and the data supports that. So, Mr. Speaker, we just need to let these 18-wheelers roll on eastbound and down, and perhaps we can have a convoy, but instead of saying we ain't going to pay this toll, I would simply ask we do not support this bill.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Carson.
I just wanted to, I misspoke. Momentum is not, is mass times velocity. The force is 1/2 mv². So maybe with your forceful voice, you'll vote aye.
Thank you. Most of us were aware of your error. That was not a slight towards you, Representative Carson. We are voting on Senate File 98, having been read three separate times. The question is, shall the bill pass? The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson. No. Bagby. Aye. Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Brechtel.
No.
Brown.
Aye.
Buchanan.
No.
Byrd.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Carson.
Aye.
Childers.
Cohey,
aye. Connolly,
aye.
Kraft,
aye.
Davison,
aye.
Dirks,
no.
Edmonds,
no.
Esquibel,
aye.
Gilmore,
aye.
Gingery,
aye.
Goggles,
no.
Hales,
aye.
Hallinan,
aye.
Hammonds,
aye.
Harshman,
aye.
Harvey,
aye.
Illaway,
aye.
Yagi,
aye.
Jorgensen,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Lockhart, Lubno,
aye.
Madden,
aye.
McKim,
aye.
McComey,
aye.
Mercer,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Miller,
no.
Millen,
aye.
Moniz,
aye.
Patton,
aye.
Peasley,
no.
Pedersen,
no.
Peterson,
aye.
Philp,
no.
Korberg,
no.
Roscoe,
aye.
Semlich,
no.
Shepperson,
no.
Steward,
aye.
Stubson,
aye.
Teeters,
no.
Thompson,
aye.
Throne, Wallace.
No.
Zwanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 45 ayes, 15 noes.
Senate File 98, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, Senate File 98 has passed the House. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 106.
Senate File 106, introduced by Senator Hastert, an act relating to public health and safety regarding medication disposal program, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Representative Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. After we passed the amendment on first reading that cut out the funding.
Would you move the amendment, please?
You know, that might be a really good
Thank
idea.
You.
Mr. Speaker, I move third reading amendment number one to Senate File 106 and ask you to consider it favorably. On the first reading amendment, we deleted the funding and we deleted the positions, knowing that there were still good things left in the bill, one of which was the ability to dispose of medication that was outdated, and also including medication such as narcotics. And so we wanted to, and the other part of the bill that was really worth saving with or without the funding was the expiration time. Before the bill, the program, you could receive the medication at the Central Processing Center in Cheyenne, and they could only hold it for 2 months, even though there may be another full year or longer left before the expiration date. And so that was something worth saving, was to keep the ability for them to hang on to those medications until 60 days before their expiration date. But what we did when we took out all of the funding, we eliminated 4 additional sites in Casper, Cody, Wheatland, and Sheridan. And we just simply left the site in Cheyenne that it's already in existence. What we heard in committee and then later on heard from the state pharmacist was that they're way overcrowded. They don't have enough personnel to carry out to give them the ability to redistribute these drugs. So if you understand how it works, patients in particularly nursing homes, if a prescription is changed and they have some pills left in their personal medication drawer, before this act happened, that medication would be thrown away. Now it comes to Cheyenne and it is redistributed through a website that doctors can call to Cheyenne and get that prescription mailed out, those extra drugs mailed out to their patients who otherwise couldn't afford it. So this amendment puts back $30,000 for mailing, for receiving prescriptions and for mailing prescriptions out. And I have to tell you that the amount of prescriptions that they're dealing with, this just simply covers their costs. And the second part of the appropriation that's put back in is $36,504 for a pharmacy technician to be able to do the work. So what we're doing by putting this smaller amount, and you can see that we have gone down from $397,000 down to $66,000. We've enabled them to continue with the business of redistributing the drugs, the prescriptions, to people who can't afford them. And so I would encourage you to allow these folks to do the job that they're doing and give them the resources to do it. They did ask for a part-time pharmacist and a full-time pharmacy tech. We hope that they can get by with the pharmacy tech and the pharmacy supervision, the pharmacist supervision that they've already got. So I would ask you respectfully if you could consider giving enough money for them to carry out this very worthwhile program. Thank you.
Representative Hammonds.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I wanted to speak in support of this amendment and to share with the body when appropriations first heard this bill, and it had a much larger amount of money in it, it was late enough in the process that we were able to act asked the director of the Department of Health. We said, we know that your agency is going to have to deal with a 5 to 10% cut. That said, would you still support this program and the amount of money that is with it? And he said, yes, I would. Given my choice, I would support this program. Now, not speaking on his behalf, but on my own behalf, there are two excellent outcomes. One, what currently happens? I don't know if any of you have had the privilege of cleaning out someone's medicine cabinet, and you get just handfuls of these pills. What do people do with them currently? Unfortunately, one of the things they do is they put them down the toilet. And so all those drugs are going into our water system. So that is one thing that we are addressing by having this program made available. The second thing, of course, is that we're helping those individuals who cannot afford medication. And I think that's why That's why the director was so in support of the program, is because he's personally witnessed the difference it makes to individuals. And for that reason, I think this is a reasonable approach that's being suggested, as to my good friend from the Upper Bighorn Basin, and I will be voting for it and would encourage you to do also.
Anyone else for their first time? Or second time? We are voting on third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 106. All those in favor, please say aye. Those opposed, no. Third reading amendment number 1 has passed. Senate File 106, having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson. Anderson. Bagby. Bagby. Barbudo. Berger. Blake. Bonner. Brechtel. Brown. Buchanan. Byrd. Kennedy, aye. Carson, aye. Childers, aye. Cohey, aye. Connolly, aye. Kraft, aye. Davison, aye. Dirks, aye. Edmonds, aye. Esquibel, aye. Gilmore, aye. Gingery, aye. Goggles, aye. Hales, aye. Hallinan, aye. Hammonds, aye. Harshman, aye. Harvey, aye. Illaway, aye. Yagi, aye. Jorgensen, aye. Landon, Lockhart, aye. Lubno, aye. Madden, aye. McKim, aye. McComey, aye. Mercer, aye. Meyer, aye. Miller, aye. Millen, aye. Moniz, aye. Patton, aye. Peasley, aye. Pedersen, aye. Peterson, aye. Philp, aye. Korberg, aye. Roscoe, aye. Simlick, aye. Shepperson, aye. Stewart, aye. Stubson, aye. Teeters, aye. Thompson, aye. Throne, Wallace, aye. Swanitzer Dan, aye. Swanitzer Dave, aye. Mr. Speaker,
aye.
I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 59 ayes, 1 no.
Senate File 106, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, Senate File 106 has passed the House. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 112.
Senate File 112, introduced by Senator Scott, an act relating to trade and commerce regarding archaic price regulation repeal, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Representative Lubnow.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 112 and ask for your positive vote. This is a technical correction. When I drafted the amendment, if you look at page 2 of my amendment, I restricted the attorney's fees and costs that could be awarded for only two violations of Wyoming Statute 40-4-101A. There are other operative provisions of the Act which contain the violations, so instead of saying 40-4-101A, I say this Act.
Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think that this amendment makes a wonderful bill even more wonderful, so I'd urge your support of the amendment in the bill.
Anyone else for their first time? Anyone for their second time? We are voting on third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 112. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Third reading amendment number 1 is passed. Senate File 112, having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson. Bagby. Bagby.
Aye.
Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Brechtel. Brown. Buchanan. Byrd. Kennedy. Carson. Childers. Cohey. Connolly. Kraft. Davison. Dirks. Edmonds. Esquivel. Gilmore. Gingery. Goggles. Hales. Hallinan. Hammonds. Harshman. Harvey. Illaway. Yagi. Jorgensen. Landon. Lockhart. Lebno. Madden. McKim. McComey. Mercer. Meyer. Miller. Millen. Moniz. Patton. Peasley. Pedersen. Peterson. Philp. Korberg. Roscoe. Simlick. Shepperson. Steward. Stubson. Teeters. Thompson. Throne. Wallace. Zwanitzer Dan. Zwanitzer Dave. Mr. Speaker, I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 45 ayes, 15 noes.
Senate File 112, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, Senate File 112 has passed the House. The next bill for consideration is Senate File 135.
Senate File 135, introduced by Senator Bebout, an act relating to environmental quality risk management, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move third reading amendment number one to Senate File 135, and I will withdraw it at the appropriate time. Members of the 60th, over the last several days since we first considered this bill, I've tried to take some time to look at it more closely and to apply my 19 years of experience in the field of environmental law to a better understanding of this bill, including my roughly seven years of representing the agency that will have to implement it. And based on research and reviewing the Environmental Quality Act, I would urge the body to support the amendment and reject the bill. Earlier today, my timing was a little off, but you should have a handout in your box with my initials in the corner. Those are my thoughts on the bill. My fundamental problem with the bill is not that there's no merit to it, but that it's certainly premature. In 2006, the legislature passed extensive legislation that's in the Environmental Quality Act requiring integrated solid waste managed plans from all our local entities. The reports are due from the local governments in July of 2009. And to me, it seems it would be a much better approach to wait until we get those reports before we essentially change the rules in the middle of the game and adopt this legislation. Wyoming's regulations, as they exist now, and they're part of a federally approved program, they require a liner for landfills on a going forward basis, or there are provisions allowing waivers of the landfill requirements. And DEQ has issued waivers. It's my understanding that they've issued four waivers that are still in effect. Now that means a local government entity can apply for a waiver if they feel like they have the technology to support meeting the standards without incurring the expense of a liner, then they can apply for a waiver. And if they lose that argument, they can appeal that decision to the Environmental Quality Council. We already have a process in place. We already have a waiver process. And I think there's a myth that risk assessment and risk management would really reduce our costs and solve what a lot of landfills fear will be overwhelming cost of a liner requirement. Risk assessment and risk management, if done properly, which of course they would have to be done properly here, are very expensive tools. And as I understand this bill, we'd be requiring the state DEQ to conduct the risk assessment. Risk management that may be required to ensure protection of groundwater, maybe I can't give you a hard estimate of that cost, but you would probably have to do extensive monitoring on the perimeters of a landfill's facility to ensure that any contamination that you're allowing is not migrating off the site. Because essentially, if you don't line a landfill, whatever you put in the ground, barring geological conditions to the contrary, is going to head towards water. It's going to head towards the groundwater. That's why we want the liner requirement. So the risk management would be that you monitor the situation so that it doesn't cause dramatic harm to groundwater or it doesn't go off the facility site. That in and of itself is going to be complicated and most likely costly. Another problem I have with the bill, even if we do need some sort of risk assessment, risk management approach in our law to landfills, we have put the burden in this bill on the Environmental Quality Council to make that decision. Now, I know some of you, but perhaps not all of you, are familiar with the Environmental Quality Council. It is a 7-person citizen body, very few of whom have any technical expertise. So we're going to ask them to make risk assessment decisions. And that structurally, if we want to look at risk assessment somewhere down the road, we have to rethink who looks at it, because I don't know that the council's really equipped. And in addition, they already have a lot of really important statutory duties related to the permitting and review of permits for our major facilities in the state. They make the same high salary that all of us do for their daily work and leave time from their regular jobs to attend EQC meetings. And I'm not sure they're the right body to be looking at this issue. Finally, I think many of you probably saw we were all emailed it, but there was a letter to the editor and an op-ed in our statewide paper from the landfill director of the big county in the middle of the state. And I think she made some very good points. And essentially, my summary is that implementing risk assessment and essentially allowing some pollution of groundwater could be penny wise and pound foolish. Because we may be just putting off, to avoid the cost of a liner now, we may be putting off very expensive remediation costs down the road. And I think, again, relying on her information, the landfill cost, the new landfill liner expense, or the landfill total cost was around $5 million in the middle of the state, with roughly, give or take a few thousand, $2 million of that being the liner cost. However, that same city is in the process of remediating historic contamination from their old landfill, back when all of us thought it was just fine to throw whatever in the trash, which eventually finds its way to the landfill. The cost of that remediation is $23 million. The cost of the remediation of the major refinery site in the middle of the state is $60 to $70 million. And that is not even full cleanup, because they've been given reduced cleanup standards. So if you're thinking about saving money now, you can pay now or you can pay later, but you might be paying a lot more later. And finally, again, as I emphasized, Wyoming has an approved program from the federal government. If we rewrite the statute and we put something like this in it, it has to go back to the federal government for approval. So if folks have frustrations with the current waiver process, or if they have frustrations with what the agency is doing now in the implementation of these requirements, let's go back and talk about that. Let's see if we can take some time when we get the reports in July and look at this issue in more depth before we make a dramatic change to our statute, which may actually, in the end, create a lot more problems than it solves. Thank you.
Representative Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. One of the reasons I like minerals is because we get to talk trash quite often. And this is one of those issues. And I have to tell you, this has been a source of frustration for me. Looking at some of the smaller counties and communities that are required to provide reports, we did some test drills in all of the landfills. That report isn't due, and I think it's July this year or July the next year. July this year. And we also ask, if you were going to consolidate, who would you consolidate with? Would you make a plan? And if you get more than one entity together to make a plan for your landfill, then we will pay more of the planning cost. And so now we have plans that are coming due. We have this planning process coming due also in July. And instead of just saying, should we consolidate? Is it economically feasible to consolidate? Now what we're looking at is consolidating. When we don't even know, we don't have the data in place, are our landfills leaking? How badly are they leaking? Are they leaking into groundwater? We don't have that data. And yet we're proceeding continually with the cart before the horse to require landfills to be lined, to require groups to get together and plan a consolidation of landfills. And when we talk about how very expensive risk assessment is, it is expensive. And do you think that Deaver, Wyoming can pay for it? Or are we going to talk about the DEQ? Who's going to pay for the risk assessment? Are we putting the burden of proof on the smaller communities, the poorer counties? I mean, who's paying for the risk assessment? I think that for this reason alone, this bill is good to put the burden of proof back on a state agency that whether it has the funds or not, they're making the requirement. And so I think we're going to pay one way or the other. I personally think it's ludicrous to ask private citizens to pay hundreds of dollars a month by the time we get through with all the studies and all of the assessments and all of the plans. We have put a bucket of money into this problem, and we still don't have the data to make a decision. I think this just slows it down and says, let's put the burden of risk on the state agency. If there's no harm, no foul, why are we requiring landfills to be consolidated and lined? We need the information before we can make a decision. And the reports aren't even due until July. This puts a risk assessment back on the agency that is requiring the action. And I think that's an appropriate placement for it. I think that we're going to pay buckets and buckets of money to take our trash to the landfill, and I think that we're going to put the burden back on our citizens through fees that they pay when we don't even know what the risk is or if there is a risk. I mean, with the landfills that I've been to in my part of the world are all in reclaimed bentonite pits. That is the lining that they put in. Do we have a leaking landfill? We don't know. We don't know until that data is all analyzed and the reports come in. I think this is one way to just slow it down, and I think that it's a good thing to put the burden of proof, the risk assessment, back with the department that's setting up the rules and regulations and requiring the reports and the drilling of the wells at a very large cost. Let's figure out, it's all coming out of our pocket. The question is, does it need to? On and in favor of the bill, against the amendment.
Madam Majority Whip.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. Mr. Speaker Pro Tem, I am against the amendment and in favor of the bill. And I guess I just, from a layman's perspective and someone who is working on the ground in our own communities with small towns and small communities that have unfortunately been mandated by us to do this planning and the monitoring. This is a good bill, and let's just talk about the bill a little bit. The bill makes it very clear. We amended in on page 4, at the end of line 3 and going on to, and on to line 4, rules promulgated using risk assessment shall conform with minimum federal law. So there's not going to be any problem with maintaining our privacy with EPA once this piece of legislation is passed. We took care of that very adequately. There is no threat, and I repeat, no threat, if you pass this piece of legislation today, that we are going to lose our primacy with EPA. We took care of that. So that being said, let's talk about what this does. This bill does not mandate that EPA update its rules. It merely says, that DEQ update its rules. It merely says, if you decide that you're going to go in and tackle the solid waste rules for sanitary landfills, municipal landfills. Understand, this doesn't cover anything but municipal landfills. We've made that very clear. Then yes, at that point in time, you have to look at these rules and you have to provide municipal landfills with some additional alternatives or options instead of lining. Now that's what it says. That doesn't say, that still means that when all is said and done, if a municipal landfill decides that the best thing for them to do, short term or long term, is to line the landfill, they can certainly do that. All it's going to do is identify a list of alternatives, some alternatives. DEQ is the appropriate one to decide what those alternatives are going to be and to spell out in rule how a municipal landfill would go about meeting the criteria of each one of the alternatives. They are the experts. Now, it's been purported to us that EQC doesn't have the expertise to deal with this issue. EQC deals with the rules and regs for DEQ, very simply. They are very smart. They are very bright. The rules start with the Water and Wastewater Advisory Board, as we all know. Then the director, if I'm not mistaken, and DEQ make the recommendations to EQC, and then EQC promulgates the rules and regulations. They are very adept at this, and they are very used to doing this. So I think that the proper place is for DEQ to use their expertise to identify other alternatives, not just lining the landfill. Now understand, they're not mandating any of the alternatives. We're simply saying, if you do decide to tackle the rules, we want alternatives in the rules. Those alternatives then can be looked at by the landfills, and they can decide which alternative is best for them. And DEQ is still the last word on whether or not that municipal landfill can meet the criteria of that alternative. This is a good piece of legislation. It's been said it's premature. I do not know how this piece of legislation could possibly be conceived as being premature. We have 52 plans, basically, or I don't know how many integrated solid waste management plans we have coming, July 1 of this year. And we have mandated lots and lots of monitoring. So all of these landfills have got good current data right now, and all the data is based on the most extreme alternative, which is lining the landfill. So they've taken the data to the furthest extreme that they possibly could. So I know they've got the data there already as of July 1, and they're not going to have to go back and collect additional data. So this is just, to me, it's such a great opportunity for us to get ahead of the curve, put this piece of language in statute. The plans will come due July 1. DEQ, they can make the decision whether or not after July 1 to promulgate new rules. If they make a no decision, then this bill just sits. If they decide to promulgate new rules, they have to include risk assessment in the new rules. And that merely identifies alternatives for the locals. If you think that this integrated plan and this economic analysis that's not coming out is not going to affect all of you, it is. I happen to know that in my county, the preliminary numbers are, if we do business as usual, the way we are right now, our trash collection or solid waste disposal is $82 a ton. If we have to line our landfill, it now becomes $146 a ton. If we transport, if we have to transport that to Worland in a lined facility, the minimum it's going to cost us in our community is $183 a ton. That's more than double what we're paying right now. This whole process is going to impact every one of you out there and every one of your constituents. And I just think that we have a great opportunity here to be able to identify some other alternatives and allow municipal landfills, and if they want to integrate, but allow them some different choices for how we deal with solid waste management in the state of Wyoming. So I clearly think that there's a need for the bill. I think this is the perfect time for the bill, and I encourage your no vote on the amendment and your aye vote on the bill.
Representative Brechtel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Rising in favor of Senate File 35 and against the amendment, Senate 135 is a common sense decision-making tool that will help our communities, but in no way gives license to polluting the groundwater. The risk assessment assures that a cost-benefit analysis based on requirements, they're even more stringent than the federal agency. A risk assessment is based on good science that complies with federal regulations, that identifies and manages risks to the environment, sets reasonable environmental goals and outcomes, that considers site-specific conditions, that considers the effectiveness of various containment options, that considers economic impacts to local communities, that guides the decisions reasonable and based on sound science. I'm most concerned for communities that will either be denied exemptions from liner requirements regardless of site-specific conditions at a very high cost to their citizens and are forced into regionalization. My community is probably one of the least affected, but without the risk assessment, we potentially hold smaller communities hostage at a very high cost to those citizens. Senate File 135 does not require adoption of new rules or modification to existing rules. It does not allow groundwater contamination based on cost. Forget the scare tactics that we see. It does make the agency decisions transparent to the public so that they can understand and be more informed and make comments. It puts the burden of the assessment on the agency who has the expertise. They are our experts and the resources to do the work, not on the local communities and the public. Having responsibility where it belongs and a better informed public will drive a better process and avoid a one-size-fits-all mentality that will cost our communities hundreds of millions of dollars, potentially more, with no more gain. Some of the information that is being handed out saying that risk assessments are rejected by the EPA is completely misleading. The bill is drafted from EPA guidelines regarding risk assessments. I think it is proactive to pass this legislation now. Waiting until landfill plans come in allows options to be taken off the table. With that, Mr. Chairman, I rise very much and on very much in favor of 135.
Representative Berg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. Members of the 60th, I'm here to address you in opposition to 135 and for this amendment. And let's make no mistake about this. What we're talking about here is groundwater. And we're talking about a crapshoot here, a roll of the dice. And your ante in this game is your groundwater. And whether you're willing to put that up as the bet that the information that these people have been talking about, the data
that they're using is the proper time and location and for what these landfills are all about. I bring you trash talk from the Minerals Committee. Being in there listening to the original comments from the people testifying, we had lots of data. And the response to this was some technical questions from myself to the presenters of the data. And in my opinion, they could not answer these questions technically to the geology, to the permutations of the trash and the groundwater to my satisfaction. So we do have lots of data, but in my opinion right now, we don't have anybody that can give us a good answer about it. So here we're back to this crapshoot. You can put up your groundwater as your ante and roll the dice and pass this, or you can wait until we get more data on later in the year, and then we can sit down and think this over again. So I take that and give it to you right there straight, on and against the bill and for the amendment.
Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. Just real quick, this idea of lining landfills has been around for a long time, and we've been debating it year after year. I can remember when I was over in Fremont County, they went from having something like 20 open different landfills to just down to three, and actually it's really two because Dubois just does C&D waste. But that was consolidation. They did it on a countywide system. And if you talk to the people that run that system over there in Fremont County, they say they're more of a trucking business than a landfill business because they have to move it from a lot of different transfer stations throughout their county. My county in particular, we don't have a landfill. There is not one single place in our county that we can put a landfill that would not contaminate the water because of our high water table. We actually truck all of the garbage out of our county, goes to sublet. A few years ago, sublet actually was arguing back, and they had in the contract negotiations, had a high price. So we actually started negotiating with Mud Lake, Idaho, which a lot of trash actually ends up at, and actually trash from Alaska ends up there. They put it on barges, send it down, put it on a train, and then they send it into eastern Oregon and into Idaho. And they've discovered, because they're trying not to contaminate water, it actually has become cost efficient to move this stuff around. And when we were negotiating with sublet, it actually became almost an option because it was almost more cost effective to haul our garbage all the way to western Idaho. And then in the end, we were able to negotiate with sublet to continue using theirs. So this idea of consolidating and regionalizing has been around. Everybody's moving toward it. The biggest argument I would use against this bill, and urge you to vote no, is there was an excellent letter sent out, and it went all to all your desks, from the organization in this state that deals with solid waste. And they listed about eight things wrong with this bill, and I just wanted to hit on some of those. One they put in there, of course, and we've heard this repeatedly, there's already a waiver process. You can get a waiver. And so if you can prove that, you know, there's no groundwater nearby, you can get that waiver. They created an advisory group. That advisory group of citizens came up with all these suggestions, essentially lined regional landfills. And we've been moving that direction. And if now all of a sudden we're going to change substantial policy. I wouldn't have a problem with changing substantial policy, except we've already put $10.5 million into this idea. We've spent $10.5 million everyone creating their regional plan. We gave them the first set of money, and then they came back last year, and they said, boy, that wasn't enough money. We need more money to do these plans. We gave them more millions of dollars. And now all of a sudden we're going to take that $10.5 million and just throw it out the door and say, well, that was okay. I guess we won't regionalize. We'll just let you keep contaminating the water, and that's fine. The idea that taxpayers are going to have to pay for this, potentially, and there's major companies that are getting involved. There's one major company now that they've consolidated quite a few of these trash transfer companies. So this private company is going to get the benefit of forcing the taxpayers to pay for these risk assessments. And this is way more than $3 million. When you start looking at the costs, it's going to be more than just simply $3 million. Now, that's not to say that lining, you know, isn't comparable. And then lastly, he put in his letter that we would lose primacy. And there was the comment earlier that there's absolutely no threat. I'm still curious as to where in the bill it says that, and how we're going to get around not losing our primacy to the EPA. Those were their points in their letter. I thought they were good points, and I thought I'd point them out on the floor.
Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. Members of the 60th, I know you read the impact statements that are that accompany these bills that are circulated, but did you really read and focus on what our state agency, which deals with solid waste disposal regulations and also deals with groundwater protections, did you read what it had to say about this veer in landfill policy? I'll paraphrase in my own words. This is venturing into the unknown. It was circulated on our desk a couple days ago. It's the agency estimate of administrative impact. I'm not going to read, but just a couple of selected highlights from it. This bill is potentially so far-reaching in concept and scope as to make it very difficult to estimate with any degree of accuracy the fiscal impact. That's all solid and hazardous waste rulemaking, permitting, and program implementation policies and guidelines would require a detailed risk assessment. And then the proposed bill has the potential to halt or significantly delay rulemaking and permitting because of the difficulty in establishing the risk associated with each action. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a note that rings with caution. Why? Because it comes with a risk and a cost. The very rough estimate, because the agency admits to an absolute lack of experience with these kinds of things, their estimate is $2.4 million a year for risk assessments that they can express no confidence in. My cautious side says, let's don't rush in. The plans on regionalization that have been referenced, regionalization of landfills are due July 1st. Let's wait for those plans, and then we'll have the opportunity to evaluate the impacts of regionalization. And for that reason, I am for the amendment and against the bill.
Mr. Speaker Pro Tem.
Mr. Speaker, I would just say shortly that I think this is a good bill. As to the waiting till the data comes in before we do anything, really before this bill takes effect, before they do the rules, they will have the data in. The DEQ will. My county was mentioned before Fremont County, and actually they had 150 different dumps, at least 150 different. I call them, they weren't landfills, they were just dumps. And those were all cleaned up. Now they have a few smaller landfills. I think they have like two smaller ones and two pretty big ones, one at Lander, one at Sandraw. They have a model trash disposal system now. It's a baler system. But they haul trash many, many miles to try and take care of it. That Sandraw site has 200 feet of shale under it. It would protect the groundwater, the shale would. There is some water there, but it's not water that you could drink ever. And it's not a lot of water. It's very small quantity. So, but they're being asked to spend millions of dollars to line that pit, and I don't think they ought to have to line it before they do some more, get the data in. They have I think they have about 20 wells around that, monitor wells, And to date, none of the wells have showed any contamination. In fact, the water between the wells has shown not to migrate between the wells. So I would ask that you do vote for this and give our counties the chance to come up with alternatives that maybe make a little more sense. They might save some money, but they one thing that would be guaranteed that they would not harm the environment. Please vote in favor of this bill.
Representative McComey.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, a lot's been talked about the EPA and the risk assessment. In 1991, the EPA rejected risk assessment based liner determinations. You can find it in the Federal Registry, Volume 56, page or number 196. That happened in 1991. I'd like to talk a little bit about, we already have five landfills because of these studies that have been determined that they do not require lining. It'll be June 30th, 2010, before the reports are totally complete, as I understand, so that's one of the things that I understand. It could be July, but June or July. When you talk about the cost of the liner, ladies and gentlemen, the cost of the liner is about one-third of the total cost because you have to still do all the earthwork to build your cell. You have to move all that dirt. You have to compact all that so you can put your liners down. Then your liner comes in. So your liner is about one-third of the total cost of a lined landfill. One of my biggest concerns, and we received a letter, an email, and I had it circulated on the floor, from the Wyoming Association of Rural Water Systems.
Point of order, Mr. Speaker.
Yes, Representative Corbett.
That association is merely should not be mentioned by name. It's an association like the one that represents our farmers and ranchers and...
I apologize, Mr. Speaker.
That is correct.
I apologize, Mr. Speaker.
It is improper to name them by name.
So, anyway, their concern is the fact that if, in fact, we do, this does lead to some contamination, then what will it cost us to clean that up? Or can you even clean the contaminated groundwater up? Where we could go ahead and continue to do the studies that we've already put the $10.5 million that's been talked about into this, complete these studies, and then if there's some risk assessment that they would like to do based upon the study, that could probably be done without this type of legislation. So I'm on and against the bill and for the amendment.
Representative Connolly.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I, too, am against the amendment and for the bill. Nope, the other way around. I'm sorry. I am for the amendment and against the bill. I want to remind this body that in 2006, you passed a resolution that said to each community in this state that they need to come up with plans by the summer of 2009 to address the landfill issues. I come from one of those communities, and a report just came out from the consultant that was hired to look into the issue. The consulting firm came up with four different alternatives that my county could look into, and they ranged from lining the current landfill to shipping to another state. But what I found most interesting in following the newspaper this week, as well as my emails, is that there's starting to be a debate within my home community about each of these alternatives, but also other possibilities. So in my home community, there's starting to be rigorous discussion and debate about what to do. And what I expect to happen is for there to be far more than these four alternatives that the consulting firm has come up with. And in fact, a community coming together to decide on what's best, what's possible, and what's best. My guess is that that could happen in each and every one of your communities. I think that we should give the process time. And although in general I'm in favor of risk management and risk assessment, I think this bill is premature. Thanks.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think we've all been inundated with good presentation, well thought out arguments on the House floor, certainly a lot of email, a lot of material that's been circulated, probably on both sides, so I think we're saturated. And I was trying to think, what could I say that hadn't been said that makes a difference? And I got to thinking about one of the classic legislators that we had who's no longer with us. He was chairman of the Education Committee for, I think, 18 years, and he followed that with numerous years on chairman of the Ag Committee. And he always had one thing that he did at the end of his presentation and argument, and I'm going to try to paraphrase that as best I can. And he's going to say, he would have said something like this if I were he, I believe that risk management is a good tool for making risk management decisions. And this is a really good bill, and please vote aye for the bill and no on the amendment.
Representative Hallinan.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I only come up here to speak with some trepidation, and with all due respect to all my colleagues, I wonder how many of them are like me that don't really have a clue about the science of this issue. I have good friends on one side saying that we've got to have this bill, and I have good friends on the other side that say that we shouldn't pass this bill. I think it's a false dilemma. Perhaps our best option, and I hesitate to say this as well, is that to have an interim study on this that I can have confidence in, and that all of my colleagues, or a vast majority of them, not a 31-vote majority, but a 40 or 45-vote majority, can feel comfortable with the decision we make. And for that reason, I'm for the amendment and against the bill. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and for Senate File 135 against the amendment, and I don't think we need an interim study. You know, that's kind of the dead letter office if we go there. This is something that's needed. This is something that affects every community in this state, the landfills. We've been getting some unreasonable costs of redoing these landfills, and that's what this bill is supposed to address. We have to look at the value of money. Does it really make a lot of sense to spend tens of millions of dollars doing something that doesn't affect anyone or doesn't affect anything? That's what we're doing here. I am one here that does a lot in hydrology. I've drilled lots of water wells. I've done lots of hydrology studies. I've read walls full of hydrologic aquifer studies, talking about transmissivity, porosity, permeability. I understand all these things. I also understand that water is a very resilient element. It moves through our earth, and it cleanses itself naturally very quickly. I also know the changing rock types around our state. I don't care how many liners you put on top of those sand dunes north of Casper to protect the groundwater there. I would much rather go out to some Cretaceous shale area where you have hundreds of feet of shale with no liner. That's what I would do. This is common sense. We have a Department of Environmental Quality in this state. Every term I've been down here, we've added staff and added staff and added staff. These are our scientists. This is the job they're supposed to be doing. As far as the EQC, if they're overseeing this, they better have some knowledge, or we need to get some people that do. Again, on and for Senate File 135.
Representative Davis wanted, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I feel like I'm one of the few people who haven't spoken on this yet today, so I thought I'd better get up here and just make a quick comment. One figure you might keep in mind is just the average person or the average amount of waste that a person accumulates over a year is 1 ton. And this bill is about lining landfills, and to take care of that, it's $6 a year to cover that, which makes us 50 cents per person per month. And I think that's just a really small price to pay. I'm just guessing, as you listen to the testimony today, that they found out that all these communities are now realizing the cost it's going to take to put these landfills in. Now, this bill is not about the total cost of the landfills. It's just about lining them. And a lot of times, landfills are built in segments, so some cities are looking at big cells to put in to begin with. But my comment at the moment would be just, why don't we be environmentally proactive for a change? Thank you.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, I spent many years in the mining industry, and I did thousands of risk assessments. We did a risk assessment on every job, on every aspect of every job before we started that job. It only makes sense to me that we would be doing this when we're talking about the kind of dollars that we're expecting our citizens to put forward and the kind of risks that we might possibly be entertaining. You know, it just makes sense to me that that would be part of the process. And I kind of find it odd in a way that the agency that we have to help us protect our environment doesn't want to do that. It doesn't make sense to me. That seems like that should be the very first thing that we do as a society or a community or a county or a state, is to take a look at what is the risk in this particular place and what is the best way to deal with that. It may not be a liner. It may not be regionalization. It may be that we've got the kind of structures in our ground that would permit this to happen without any of those things. Or it may be that the cheapest and most effective long-term solution is a well in the middle of it that keeps the water coming to the center. There's lots of alternatives, and that's what a risk assessment does. It looks at each aspect of a particular problem, and it says, how big is this risk, and what is the most effective way that we can deal with it? Against the amendment and for the bill.
Representative Carson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I agree with all the points made earlier today to defeat this bill. And one thing that surprises me is this state has to get real serious and I think real quick about waste management. If we're burying something in the ground that can go somewhere else and that has an economic value, it should be studied. That basically could reduce all the environmental impacts that if we're doing hazardous waste or e-waste recycling, all these sorts of things. This bill doesn't even talk about that. It doesn't look into how we divert things from even going in the ground, and then we're worried about the landfill. That could, I think, reduce the size of these landfills and save your community's money. And if it can create an economy, we get a massive we get that economy of scale for, you know, sending a product that can be recycled or reused to different parts of the state or out of state that has a value. That's not even discussed in here in this bill, and I think it's something that we need to continue to bring up.
Anyone else for their first time? Your second time, Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just briefly, just a couple of additional comments. Again, remember that putting a liner underneath these things isn't the best alternative. It used to be years ago that the scientists and the government officials thought using asbestos for everything was the best thing since sliced bread. Well, that turned out to be wrong. Well, what do you think these liners are made out of? They're not made out of asbestos, but they're made out of PVC. That's a proven carcinogen in many environments. So do you really want that affecting our groundwater in every community of the state? I would much prefer
using natural bentonitic soils for these liners in areas that are properly engineered and properly designed. The representative from up Lovell way, the bentonite's up there. You know, that's a great area. We ship that bentonite all around the world from up there. Again, they mine bentonite around Casper. They mine bentonite up at Colony. We have bentonite on the east flank of the Wind River Mountains. There's no limit to the places where we can build good landfills with good science behind them. This put our scientists that we're already paying to work and make them design this properly. This vote for this bill and do risk assessment.
Representative Corbett.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. For my last time, I guess I just want to remind the body, it was said very early on that there was nowhere in the bill where it said that we were not going to maintain our primacy, and I just remind you of the amendment that was put on the bill that says rules promulgated using risk assessment shall conform with minimum federal law. We will not lose our primacy if we pass this piece of legislation. What this piece of legislation does, it allows DEQ the opportunity, if they decide to revise their rules, understand that's what this is about, then they're going to provide municipal landfills with some alternatives. That's totally appropriate in line of where we have been, and it's totally appropriate even for the regional landfills to have some other alternatives to look at other than line or not line. So this is a good piece of legislation. It is in no way premature. It does not mandate that DEQ update its rules. It merely says if you decide to revise the rules, you need to take into account risk assessment. This is a good piece of legislation. It is not premature. It is proactive. We already know that the plans are coming July 1. What a great opportunity for us to actually do something in advance rather than trying to react to it 9 months after the fact. So this is a good piece of legislation, and I urge this body to reject the amendment and support the bill.
Representative Davis, want to serve for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm definitely against the bill for the amendment. Two things wrong with this bill. Number one, is this bill takes effect immediately. The data that we're waiting for doesn't come out till July 1st of this year, and some of the other data doesn't come out till July 1st the following year. Think about what we're trying to do with this bill. Here's the other problem. Look at the title. Risk assessment. What is our most precious resource in the state of Wyoming besides our people? It's water. And that's what we're trying to get around, is letting landfills go, contaminating our water, and then in the future years, we have to come up and do a massive cleanup. So protect our water. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Byrd, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just to reiterate and revisit, in committee, these people had the opportunity to present evidence and testimony of a technical nature to us, and they failed to give us a compelling reason on a technical basis why we need to go forward with this. So I urge you, just based on that, we need to vote this down and wait for the information to come later this year. Thank you.
Anyone else for their second time prior to the sponsor? Representative Throne, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you, everyone, for the vigorous debate. I know we've been at this for a while, and I will try and respond quickly. First of all, the current law, the current program, provides for a waiver process. There are probably places in the state where bentonite-lined landfills are appropriate. We can do that under the current law. I'm failing to see how this solves the problems of our small communities. I fully agree that we have to deal with the waste issues in those small communities, but this bill is not going to help those small communities. Because if those small communities, first of all, in order to get a good risk assessment, somebody's going to have to pay. Maybe not the small community, maybe the state of Wyoming. But as has been pointed out, we've already invested a lot of money in this process. Let's see what that investment proves or produces before we change in midstream. But if a small community relies on a less than adequate risk assessment, they may save some money now, but 20, 30 years from now, when some neighboring landowner gets upset if they find out something's migrated underground onto their property, then the cost to remediate could be much higher. It's been said that this bill is intended to provide alternatives. I'm having trouble understanding exactly how it's going to provide alternatives. I think in order for risk assessment and risk management to work, they've got to be site-specific. And this only deals with the rulemaking process. So again, I'm confused as how this is to a tool that could actually help our small communities or our large communities. And it's also been said that the cost of a liner is prohibitive. But at least in the middle of the state, their cost for a family of four for a year is roughly, their estimated cost is $25 for a family of four for all their residents or per resident. I don't know, that seems like a reasonable cost for all of us to incur to protect our groundwater, which is is an incredible resource in this state. And historically, we have always been very, very, very careful with our groundwater. Finally, with regard to the primacy question, you know, I can't predict what the federal government's going to do. We all know that we can't predict what the federal government's going to do. But I can tell you that with this in statute, EPA rejected risk assessment and risk management as an alternative for landfills in 1991 when they promulgated the rules that are in place now. I can't stand up here and say that maybe there aren't some elements of risk assessment that our state's not applying that they could. Perhaps that's true. But if we pass this law, we can't implement it immediately, even though it says we will, because we have to get approval from the federal government, because they have to approve our program. We have a proven program, approved program, in place for landfills. If we put something new in statute, we disrupt the whole process. So let's stop, pause. Let's take some time to look into this option, if indeed it is an option, and consider whether we're really going to solve the problems that people feel we have. If our agency, DEQ, is being too difficult with the waivers, then let's go talk to them about it. Let's get them to change the existing waiver rules to make them more reasonable. But let's not impose an uncertain tool on a program that's already in place when we don't know that it's going to get us anywhere. We need more time to talk about this. It is premature. Let's let the 2006 legislation run its course and make sure that we continue to have the protection that I know that all of us want for our groundwater. Thank you. And I would withdraw the amendment at this time.
Thank you. Senate File 135, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bagby.
No.
Barbudo.
No.
Berger.
No.
Blake.
No.
Bonner.
No.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Buchanan.
Aye.
Bird.
No.
Kennedy.
No.
Carson. Childers. Childers?
Excused.
Childers excused. Cohey.
No.
Connolly.
No.
Kraft.
No.
Davison.
Aye.
Dirks.
No.
Edmonds.
Aye.
Esquibel.
No.
Gilmore.
No.
Gingery.
No.
Goggles.
No.
Hales.
No.
Hallinan.
No.
Hammonds.
No.
Harshman.
Aye.
Harvey.
Aye.
Illaway. Yagi.
Aye.
Jorgensen.
No.
Landon.
No.
Lockhart.
Aye.
Lubno. Lubno.
No.
Madden.
No.
McKim.
Aye.
McComey.
No.
Mercer.
Aye.
Meyer.
No.
Miller.
Aye.
Millen.
No.
Moniz.
Aye.
Patton.
Aye.
Peasley.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Philp.
Aye.
Korberg. Roscoe.
No.
Semlick.
Aye.
Shepperson.
Excuse.
Shepperson excused. Stewart.
No.
Stubson.
Aye.
T. Teeters.
Aye.
Thompson.
No.
Throne.
No.
Wallace.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dan.
No.
Zwanitzer Dave.
No.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 25 ayes, 33 noes, 2 excused.
Senate File 135, having failed to receive the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, Senate File 135 has failed to pass the House. Messages from the Senate.
Message 447, Mr. Speaker. The Senate did concur on House amendments to the bills listed below by the vote indicated. Senate File 56, School Finance Appropriation, Ayes 22, Noes 8, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 449, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 69, Driver's Education Program Funding. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in amendment form as follows by the vote indicated, ayes 21, noes 9. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 450, Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 73, Victims of Crimes, Reporting and Notification, ayes 29, noes 1, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 451, Mr. Speaker, House Bill 85, Motor Vehicle Chain Law. The House bill listed above passed third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated, ayes 16, noes 14. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting listed amendments, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 452, Mr. Speaker, House Bill 8118, Uniform Prudent Management of Institutional Funds Act. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated, ayes 30, noes 0. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 453. Mr. Speaker, House Bill 160, Constituent Service Allowance. A House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 21, noes 9. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendment, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 454, Mr. Speaker, House Bill 161, Serve Wyoming. The House bill listed above passed on the third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 25, noes 5. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 455, Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 162, State Employees Retirement Military Credit, ayes 30, noes 0, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Mr. Speaker, message 456, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 174, Provisional Opportunity Hathaway Scholarship, ayes 22, noes 8, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 457, Mr. Speaker, House Bill 179, Phase 2 Study I-80 Tolling. The House bill listed above passed on a third reading in amended form by the vote indicated, ayes 18, noes 12. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting listed amendments, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 458. Mr. Speaker, House Bill 222, Establishment of Private Roads. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in amended form by the vote indicated, ayes 26, noes 4. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting listed amendments, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 459, Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 267, Commercial Motor Vehicles Definitions, ayes 30, noes 0, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 460, Mr. Speaker, House Bill 94, Prescription Drug Database. The House bill listed above passed on a third reading in amended form by the vote indicated, ayes 29, noes 1. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting listed amendments, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 461, Mr. Speaker, Senate File 21, Subdivisions Located Within Irrigation Districts. The Senate adopted the Joint Conference Committee Number 1 report on the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 27, noes 3, signed Diane Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 462. Mr. Speaker, House Bill 299, School Facilities Budget Process. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 22, noes 8. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 463. Mr. Speaker, House Bill 61, Revisers Bill. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 30, no 0. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting listed amendments. Signed, Diane Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 464. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below failed to pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 136, State Legal Action, NEPA and ESA. Ayes 15, noes 15. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 465. Mr. Speaker, House Bill 130, State Parks Matching Account. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 20, noes 10. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 466, Mr. Speaker, House Bill 144, Transparency in Government. The House bill listed above passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 28, noes 2. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 467, Mr. Speaker, House Bill 191, Motor Carrier Transportation Contracts. The House bill listed above passed on a third reading in amended form by the vote indicated. Ayes 30, no 0. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendment. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 468, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 211, Veterans License Plates. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 20, noes 10. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 469, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 230, Vehicle Sales and Use Tax. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Excuse me. Aye 16, noes 14. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting listed amendments. Message 470, Mr. Speaker, House Bill 239, Bighorn Basin Discovery Center. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in amended form. Ayes 21, noes 9. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting listed amendments. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 471, Mr. Speaker, House Bill 298, Medical Practice Act Revisions. The House bill listed above passed on a third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 29, noes 1. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 475, Mr. Speaker, a motion to reconsider the bill listed below failed to pass the Senate by the vote indicated. House Bill 136, State Legal Action, NEPA and ESA. Ayes 8, noes 22. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
We are at that order of business, a request to concur with Senate amendments to House bills. The first message for our consideration is message number 421 on House Bill 152, Chairman Cohey. Excuse me, I meant Chairman McComey. Excuse me, vote to both of you.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I don't know how you'd make such a mistake. He's got a lot more hair. Mr. Speaker, I move concurrence on message number 421, referencing House Bill 152, Athletic Trainers Licensing, and would urge the body to vote aye. I will ask the bill's sponsor to get up and address the changes, the good gentleman from Mustang Country.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. They took out a provision which a good senator from my county thought fenced some folks out. And we had a long talk, and so he feels better, and we feel better, and everybody over there feels better. And so I don't think it hurts the bill at all. It took out a section that said pecuniary gain, folks working for money. And so I think the bill's in good shape. The folks who want the bill think it's in good shape, and so I'd urge your aye vote and stand for any questions.
Anyone else for their first time? Chairman Landon.
Mr. Speaker, I'm sorry I hadn't looked at this a little earlier. This repealed a section out of the physical therapist licensure, and I was just curious as to what that was. Oh, that had to do with athletic trainer. I think that's, if you'd like to just address that, I think that's okay.
Representative Harshman, for your second.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker and Mr. Chairman. Appreciate the question. Yeah, there was, of course, the athletic trainers have operated under an exemption of the PT Practice Act, and the current PT Act that we passed still had the exemption, depending on what happened to House Bill 152. So as we pass 152, that exemption then no longer needs to stay in the PT Act. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Anyone else for their second time? We are voting on the motion to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 152, and the majority of the elected members is required. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bagby.
Aye.
Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Buchanan.
Aye.
Byrd.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Carson.
Aye.
Childers excused.
Aye.
Childers, aye. Cohey. Connolly,
aye.
Kraft,
aye.
Davison,
aye.
Dirks,
aye.
Edmonds,
aye.
Esquivel,
aye.
Gilmore,
aye.
Gingery,
aye.
Goggles,
aye.
Hales,
aye.
Hallinan,
aye.
Hammonds,
aye.
Harshman,
aye.
Harvey,
aye.
Illaway,
aye.
Yagi,
aye.
Jorgensen,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Lockhart,
aye.
Lubno,
aye.
Madden,
aye.
McKim,
aye.
McComey,
aye.
Mercer, Meyer,
aye.
Miller,
aye.
Millen,
aye.
Moniz,
aye.
Patton,
aye.
Peasley,
aye.
Patterson,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Philp,
aye.
Korberg,
aye.
Roscoe,
aye.
Simlick,
aye.
Shepperson excused, Stewart,
aye.
Stubson,
aye.
Teeters,
aye.
Thompson,
aye.
Throne,
aye.
Wallace,
aye.
Swanitzer Dan, Swanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 59 ayes, 1 excused.
By your vote, you have voted to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 152. We are at that order of business of consideration of Joint Conference Committee reports. The first report for our consideration is Joint Conference Committee number 1 on House Bill 1, the budget bill. Chairman Berger.
Mr. Speaker, could I just have pleasure of the floor?
You may have privilege of the floor.
I think it would be great if you just voted aye.
Aye.
I liked Chairman McComey's previous amendment. But why don't you just stand up quick and shake out a little bit so we can do this. And then I'll tell you what documents you need.
Stand up and do the hokey pokey.
And the hokey pokey.
Get the right foot in and put the right foot out. Left foot, do the hokey pokey and shake it all about. That's called the 35th inning stretch. Chairman Berger.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move for adoption, Joint Conference Committee Report Number 1 to House Bill 1 and ask for your favorable consideration. And what I'd like to do is go through some explanations for you. As you recall, these are the amendments to House Bill 1 and in conference with the Senate and their amendments. So I just want to make certain that you all have a few pieces of paper before you, since I don't think you want me to say trust me. But you should have before you the agenda summary, which has the amendments that we concurred on in our joint conference right here. And just to help you understand how that works, if you take the second long sheet, which has the identical amendments, the non-identical, and then the amendments that we made compromises on the back page of 2. What's important, and hopefully you've figured this out by now, but D stands for delete, A stands for amended, and F stands for further. So in a lot of situations when you get down to our non-identical amendments, you're going to have things like delete, further, amend, and then it will have in italics probably what it is that we did on that. Okay, so that's the next document. And then to see what we did to the general fund, you have another long legal size sheet of paper. And what I've tried to do is we've followed through with the original of the governor's recs, and then what we did as JAC Action when we brought the original House Bill 1 to you, and then the compromises that we have made in committee based on the House and Senate amendments, and then the final House Bill 1, if accepted today, with the bottom line on the far right there showing the expenditures at $164,477,974 as the bottom line on that, okay? And I think you also have, just for your review too, was an update just on the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund and how those dollars flow and what is projected. I think what I'd like to say first, Mr. Speaker, is I was kind of amazed that we spent all of these weeks on amendments, both in the House and the Senate, and then in our joint conference, and that the net result was a reduction of another $892,000 to our bottom line. But I think that what I would say, too, is that as our economic picture has changed, we have been looking very closely at this budget. Keep in mind, again, that this is a supplemental budget. It's amending our original budget for 09 and 10. What we are looking at here is sustainability and continuing on projects that we think are worthwhile. And I would say, too, that there are things that we in the House gave up that we think are really good ideas and have merit. But at the end of the day, we came to a compromise that I think was important, and that was the diversion from the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund to our Spending Policy Reserve account that allows us a tool to adjust based on economic times. Hopefully, we won't need to use that tool, and those dollars at the end of 2010 will go back into our Permanent Mineral Trust Fund, and it'll be a savings further. But I think it behooves us to have this additional monies available to us to look at when we come back in December, and hopefully we only have to come back in December. So with that, we will start with the amendments. And just give me 1 second. I think the two sheets that are important then we'll just work with. And if no one has questions about the identical and the the identical amendments. I won't go over them. They're the same as I did last week with you prior to the conference committee, but I will certainly take questions from you. And then we'll start on the non-identical. And the other little number that I wanted to remind you of is the report page, which is next, is just to the left of your action. That number, so when we get down to it, the First Amendment we're going to have that has a number in front of it is a 3, and that is on this handout that you received today with the amendments and the wording. Because what we're doing here in most cases is we've either deleted our amendment and accepted the Senate's and amended that, so we have new wording from both chambers, or we've created new language from deleting it totally. So the first one that we deleted was the House Amendment 2 on third reading. These are all, most of these are third reading, which was the Tribal Liaison Office Space Telephone and Internet Access and Email System, and that will just be dealt with by the group. And the next one was the Child Care Finance Services with the Department of Workforce Services and the Business Council, and the House succeeded to the Senate, and we deleted that amendment. The next one had to do with second reading. 5 is for the Game and Fish, and it was on a sage-grouse report, and there's actually a report coming out in August, and we didn't need any of this information that was being required here. It would have been duplicated. And the next one, 2010, has to do with the ignition interlock, and House Bill 141 failed, and Senate File 88, as you know, has passed, and it doesn't at this time require that position. So we deleted that amendment. Now, on the next two amendments, which have to do with the Department of Health, 48, are the footnotes dealing with Medicaid, and it was to deal with the primary care physicians. And I want to combine that, so I'm going to have you flip the page, but you've got the House Amendment 3024 and Senate 3010. And the House had a full $2 million. The Senate had $1 million. So we compromised on $1 million there. And then if you turn the page over on 2, you'll show that we added, took the other amendment for $1 million, which is Senate 3010 on that. I think I got that right. So yeah, Senate 3010. The next three have to do with the Department of Health on page 1, back there again, with the dual diagnosis, and I think you probably remember our discussion about that, requiring the Department of Health for a report. And we all just had different language, so we just deleted and further amended to get more succinct language that we needed for that reporting requirement. And the next one was a Senate amendment that had to do with providing funding for the Senior Center services for Wyoming and compensation. And in our original budget of 2910, we appropriated substantial dollars to all of those organizations. And what this was doing was to add more fundings to it because there was a problem with the formula and how it was being distributed. What we did is the Senate compromised on the amount. We reduced it to $100,000, and in the process are working on revamping that formula that we hope will be fair and equitable, and they are required to bring us back a formula and a report for December when we start working on 2011-12 budget. The House was able to keep the funding for public TV antenna. We won there. The next amendment, 2010, has to do with the computerized case management data collection for judiciary, for the judicial branch, and what was added on the Senate side was all the juvenile data information. And we think this is a good thing. They have a new modern system. We are trying to really update our processes with juvenile matters, and I think this will work. So we did that. The next section is 3, which is on capital construction. It has to do with the funding of, if you recall, with DFS and the Pioneer Home, but for the Pioneer Home and for the girls' school and the funding. And we had originally, with the JAC position, had put that in general fund. Then we had an amendment. We moved it back into the Permanent Land Trust Fund and the Permanent Land Income Fund. We made a compromise there and took some money out of the permanent land income account, and we moved it to the general fund for $3 million of water appropriation to water count 1, which you will see down on delete and further amendment 3027 amendment. So what we did there is we deleted that amendment because we had taken that money out of reversions and took the money out of the GF and compromised on the trust money for the state facilities. So we gained, at the end of the day, we gained $3 million in water account 1, which I think is a good thing. Moving down then to section 300s, we deleted we had language in there. If you remember the special handout we had on the Department of Health and dealing with all of the different ways that they would spend the appropriations that we created with reversions and securing the $20 million in the auditor's office and using Series 100 dollars. We just left the original priority that came out of JAC. So that was deleted. And we further amended that with allowing for up to $1 million from the stimulus package to be used for reducing the waiting list for children's waivers, if that were to come to pass. And the next amendment was from the Senate. We left that in there. We just changed the word from economic analysis to an analysis of the state employees' health care benefits. And we're just trying to address those health care issues and those expenditures, and hopefully one of those are proposals that we have on the interim committee for appropriations is to look at all of those benefits. The next amendment, 3020, is dealt with the endowments. If you remember, we appropriated further funding, additional funding to both of those accounts. Also at this time, House Bill 155 has passed, and we just needed to have some language in there that the reversion dates would go away, and that's the details there. Then we deleted the dynamic compaction amendments that we had on the House side that were in the AML funding. So that is gone. That's gone because we are under the impression that it will be taken care of by the AG's office. The next one has to do with the AML funding, and we took the Senate's amendment dealing with the language for uranium research at the School of Energy. Our understanding is that the School of Energy found that our amendment would be cost prohibitive at this time and did not have the staff to do that project, but they could work with the language from the Senate side. So we want to make progress in that area, so we went with that amendment. The next one has to do with, if you remember, we did not have an amendment on dealing with the reversion dates for the AML monies. We left that open because as we've been working on the budget, we wanted to make certain of that language and those details. And we went ahead and extended those dates and took the Senate amendment. And the next one, again, we did not have an amendment on, and that was splitting up $500,000 for the School of Ag to be able to start the Reclamation Ecology Project and then for them to have endowment money to work on that program in the School of Ag. So that was a Senate amendment that we did not have. The next one we let go of is basically was to allow the treasurer's office to use reversions of $3.6 million to take care of a gap accounting error, and we've decided we'll just let the treasurer's office work with that issue as they move forward. We kind of got into a discussion about whether or not we should be using reversions to take care of some of these things, and we just decided to not go there. The next one has to do with the wind energy. We are calling it a task force now. It's not a select committee, and we actually used up a lot of hire on this one. The Wind Energy Task Force now will consist of 4 House members, 3 senators, and 2 at-large positions. The senators really didn't want to spend time working on a task force or a select committee, so we've kind of created this with really the strong interest from the House side, and we'll hope to produce some good products out of that. So, and we also had to add $12,500 to that to support the group. And with that, we will actually move $2,000 over to the governor's office to take care of their appointees because, as you know, they get paid the same that we do on a daily basis for a committee meeting like that. And then, of course, to our greatest disappointment was to let go of the homeowner's property tax relief in trade of or working for the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund diversion to use later. As we work our budget. So that was the $36 million there. And in that whole transaction, that's where we added the $3 million to Water Account 1. So that's where we finished up that conversation, was in that compromise. The next piece has to do with, if you recall, the amendment that directed the governor to have his agencies look at a 5 and 10% reduction plan. And if I think it would be of interest, if you have not done that already, to look at page 4 at that language in section 311. It's a continuation of the language from our budget of 910, giving direction to the governor and who will participate. And I think it's important as a legislative branch that we have some direction going forth and how that's taken care of so that we are fiscally responsible as we look forward to what needs to be done in order to prevent a deficit to our budget. And that's what this language is about. So I know you'll be having reading things in the papers and having discussions about this whole issue. And I would let you know, too, that we'll try to work very closely as a JAC committee with the governor's office to make good decisions, and hopefully it won't be as bad as we've been talking about. The next one is the American Recovery Act, which we've named the LISA Amendment, which is the Legislative Economic Stimulus Account, and that would be another one for you to look at. The language, which is right after the Section 311 on 8, and that's it's as broad as we can go at this time. As you know from my conversation last week with you, that there's about 20 agency individuals working with the State Lands Investment Board director and the governor's office and with members of our group as to how this is all going to play out. And so what we've tried to do, just to protect all branches of government in how this works and where it flows and what kind of reporting we get and what benefits we can take advantage of without long-term commitments that do not have funding at the end of the day, that we're on top of it. So we are hoping that this language will give us that security. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is it on the amendments. And so I stand for questions.
Questions? Are there any questions? Representative Madden.
Oh.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I thought you were somebody called the question. So, I'm on.
Just called the question?
No.
Go ahead, Representative.
Yeah. I'm on this page here, Madam Chairman.
Sure.
If you go down to the bottom, there's a clear almost the bottom where it says bus service Bighorn Basin. I don't know if I was out of the room when this was talked about today or not, but was I? Oh, okay.
No.
Well, anyway, that bill happened to hit our committee, and in the analysis of that committee hearing, it turned out that each bus ride cost $408 per rider, and we thought, you know, almost unanimously that wasn't a very good deal. So that bill didn't even pass, and that's what the number was, as I recall, was $250,000 for this program, and they get like, I can't remember, it's like just a few riders a week or per month. I mean, this is, I'm kind of new at this, and I don't know what's happening here. Thank you.
Representative Carson, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is for the good appropriations chair. I've been sort of watching the AML fundings in the session, and now that's a really big topic, I guess, back to the east of us. I'm trying to reconcile on the uranium adjustments and then the money we can ask for, and I feel like we're not asking for the maximum amount. We're leaving some money on the table. And we might as well get as much as we can while it's still there. And maybe it is still there, and I'm just feeling like we're several hundred thousand dollars short from our maximum we can ask from the Fed. So I don't know if you can help reconcile that for me and for others. Thank you.
Chairman Landon, for your first.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On the first page of the cheat sheet, you had, in the non-identical amendments, down about halfway, there was a House amendment that had added a footnote allowing expenditure increases up to $2 million if the general fund Medicaid did not exceed the combined budget. And that, and you said, you made some comments about that, that how, and I see there that, that it's been added up to $1 million. Did you have some additional comments? Is there some room there for additional funding? I think that it's anticipated that there might be some in Medicaid with the economy slipping down, and so I was wondering what that was.
Anyone else for their first time? Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. Would you come?
Okay. Thank you. I'm going to work on as many of these as I can. On the bus service in the basin, the $250,000.
Madam Chairman, I'm sorry. Point of order.
Oh, sure.
I'd rather take a first time before you take your second time.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. The last question about the $1 million, $2 million, our amendment was $2 million for reimbursement for primary care physicians. That's what that is. The Senate amendment was $1 million, and we adopted the Senate position of $1 million on that. It doesn't, that's not the Medicaid reimbursement dollars. It's the primary care reimbursement for the primary care physicians. Assuming that there are increases in the Medicaid numbers of Medicaid patients they will be seeing. The AML dollar question, $75 million is approximately what's available, and I can't remember exactly what's appropriated, but if we haven't appropriated a couple hundred thousand, that's a small percentage of the total, relatively small percentage of the total. And the governor typically makes the point of trying to appropriate all of those AML dollars in the year that they're available. The I would just want to encourage you to vote aye on this conference committee report. When you look at what happened with the PMTF money, you recall our amendment was $100 million that would revert back to, it would go into the Legislative Stabilization Reserve account and revert by April 1st of 2010. The Senate said, no, we'll give you half of $35 million because those are the only funds that are going to be available before next session because those funds come in quarterly payments. And they didn't believe that our amendment actually meant $100 million, even though it said $100 million. We've eventually convinced them that our amendment did mean $100 million, and that's why we then have the compromise for half of the 1% continues to flow into the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund. The other half will go into the Spending Policy Reserve account and be subject to further legislative action, because that's what our amendment originally said. We would have had to take further action to spend those dollars out of the Legislative Stabilization Reserve account, and then by April 1st of 2010 they would have spilled. Or they would have gone to the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund as they were originally intended. Now, with the Spending Policy Reserve account, it's not profiled in the Legislative Stabilization Reserve account. It's in the Spending Policy Reserve account. And that account, even though it's a formula account, and if you're over the target of $102 million, that current target, at the end of the biennium, June 30th of 2010, anything over that target goes into the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund. So that's how it will work. It will still require an appropriation, and it's the same type of mechanism that we had. It's a little longer period of time, but it's a good compromise on that amendment. The $3 million to Water 1 is a good compromise. We had $6 million, the Senate had none. And we were able to hang on to half of that, and that's a little more than I thought we'd be able to hang on to for the Water 1. We still have the Wind Energy Task Force. I believe that's critically important to the state. We have the language in the budget about the governor's authority and the agency's authorities on how the stimulus dollars can be spent. And no agency or department or division can apply for those funds to the federal government without the governor signing on the application form. That's the first check. Then any appropriations to agencies require the governor's B-11 process. And the stimulus package also offers us the increased Medicaid match, federal match. Right now, federal government pays 50 cents of every dollar. They will now pay 56 cents of every dollar. So that additional 6% or 6 cents for every dollar means that in our Department of Health budget, where we have a fairly sizable line item for general fund dollars to the Medicaid account, there will be dollars there that could potentially revert to the general fund at the end of the biennium. And if it was a dollar for dollar wash, it could be $60 million that could revert, because it's projected that that amount is $59 million, that 6.2% equals approximately $59 million. And this is the second year of our budget. We're completing our biennial budget with this supplemental budget. We have the capital construction projects in here that need to be funded. We need those BioSafe Level 3 labs. We had funded those once before. The cost has gone up significantly because we didn't build them. We have $17 million for the prisons. And we have Department of Health dollars in there, and then you can see, really, there are three components to this budget. There are capital construction items, there are the agency budgets, and then the Section 300 is also on that the long cheat sheet, the vertical one. The Section 311 language that the good chairman of appropriations asked you to look at broadens what exists now in that Section 311 and says it defines agency as including everything you can think of that then allows the executive branch to go in and make cuts. It has been suggested that there are items of priority within the supplemental budget that are items in the supplemental budget that have priority over the things in the standard budget. That the only way you can go in and cut effectively is to pass the supplemental budget that becomes a companion with the standard budget, and then you can cut across the board, not across the board cut, but you can cut in every appropriation that we have made in the standard budget of last year and the supplemental budget of this year. That gives the greatest flexibility to go in and drill down on some that can afford to be drilled down on. So I would encourage your aye vote on the budget and thank the Appropriations Committee and the Joint Conference Committee from the House for their hard work on this. I think it's a fair budget and a fair compromise with the Senate. They were not happy with many of our third reading amendments. Those third reading amendments passed this House with a lot of strength. And on the property tax relief issue, when House Bill 68 came out of the Revenue Committee in the Senate, it came out with a do-pass recommendation and then went to the Senate Appropriations Committee and got a do-not-pass recommendation on a 5-0 vote. Was anticipated to some degree that might come up on general file in the Senate and we would see what happened. But after that strong vote in the Senate Appropriations Committee, it took away any momentum that House Bill 68, the Homestead Exemption Property Tax Credit, had over in the Senate. And was a pretty clear indication that the House's desires for property tax relief were simply not we're not going to go anywhere in the Senate, and it was also made clear that even our budget amendment would not survive. So when the chairman says it was exchanged for the property tax relief, or suggests that the PMTF was part of that, what it came down to on last Friday was the Senate conferees saying, come to us with a package, because there were about 5 or 6 items left. And the House conference went back to them and said, here's the package, and that was rejected. And part of that package was, we'll give up property tax, we want this, we'll give up that. So it was a comprehensive settlement package to them that they rejected, and then we came back yesterday and were able to negotiate the final elements of that. So just wanted you to know that. Thank you.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you. I'd remind the body that if you look on the page 6 of the amendments, that the wind energy is dependent upon the Management Council's decision that comes. I thought that wasn't brought out. Management Council decided to assign it to standing committees or to the task force, either one. And I have no objections to that. I just thought it ought to be brought out so you all know about it.
Representative Pedersen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I was just going to answer the question of the good representative from House District 40. He's exactly right. We did defeat a bill on this floor about the bus service. That's exactly right. But there was, I wouldn't necessarily call it a mere amendment, but a very like amendment was within the budget. And that's what that's saying down there underneath the Section 3 under Total General Fund to Locals. 341 was the section there that addressed that, and so that was within the budget bill, separate of the bill that was being spoken of by the good representative from House District 40. So this is within that package. That was not in the conference committee, and we didn't cover that in there. That was that was already within the original budget bill that we passed out onto the House.
Anyone else for their first time? Your second time, Representative Carson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You must have been able to tell by the way I was walking. I have a question related to the Section 345, which is the ARRA, not the ARP. It's on page 5, and it's under double I. It says all other funds provided to the state or to be provided to public political subdivisions or other entities through the state or state agency may be distributed for expenditure upon approval by the governor. I know there's stimulus funding out there for individual businesses, grants, et cetera, et cetera. This also relates to the next page, number 6. It goes into this as well, not subject to the expenditure distribution under this paragraph. Are we comfortable with that language enough that I know that there's businesses that go out to get a federal loan, to start a business, to grow jobs, to do all this, that may be sort of a state, you know, your state gets so many Small Business Administration monies per capita, but it doesn't go to the state government. It just gets sort of divvied up per person, and then you could access that. There's different, you know, indirect, direct grant applications, whatever. Are we comfortable with it that we're not blockading anything and access to that funds by businesses that want to use that or could use that?
Anyone else for their second time? Chairman Berger, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Whenever the good representative from Laramie gets up and he starts going like this, I'm really ready to get out on the slopes and do some snowboarding. It makes me happy. Back to the stimulus, that language. We had many, many folks working on this language to make certain that it was broad and that we hope that we could capture as many of the different dynamics that are going to take place with this stimulus package. What's really important is we tried to cover in that the most of those areas or entities that we deal with in our state budget. And we hope that we have that direction. There are certainly going to be grants and things that we're not going to have any part of that are considered individual. But we, at the last day prior to conferencing, we added the part about local government. It is somewhat arduous, but we felt that it was important that we try to have some type of documentation that would allow us to know what our local governments are receiving in this stimulus package. I think the other thing that's really important, too, is that I've handed out so much paperwork to all of you folks that I'm afraid to hand you out anymore. But with the American Recovery Package, there was an application that's called the National Act of Recovery something or other. It's called NAFR. And it's a 3-page document that is required, if you read this amendment, it's required of anyone under our budget that submitted to the executive branch for approval. Because what we'd like to be make certain of is that if it has a long-term commitment, that we know what our role is going to be on that. So it's a fairly tedious process to go through that. We don't want to be a roadblock to individuals that could take advantage of this and it be a positive thing for their community. So that was part of the language that we've worked on, and we'll hope that was successful. And as far as the AML monies, I felt like I had handed out several documents to you, but if I have not, we do have a current one. We've pretty much maximized out on 2008 and 9 as far as projects. That doesn't mean that they are in the process of being built, but we have committed those, and we feel as comfortable as one could at this point, that those monies will be, once we have an expense voucher to the federal government, we will receive those dollars back. So that is our hope, and we are working on the next list, and we will hope for those funds too. So what I will tell you too is that we put that on our priority list for the JAC, the AML funding, the process, and we will look at that more carefully too through the interim. And if there are no other questions, I would call for the question.
We are voting on Joint Conference Committee number 1 report to House Bill 1. A majority of the elected members is required to adopt the report. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson. Anderson.
Aye.
Bagby.
Aye.
Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Buchanan.
Aye.
Bird.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Carson.
Aye.
Childers.
Aye.
Cohey.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Davison.
Aye.
Dirks.
Aye.
Edmonds.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Gilmore.
Aye.
Gingery.
Aye.
Goggles.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye.
Hallinan.
Aye.
Hammonds.
Aye.
Harshman.
Aye.
Harvey.
Aye.
Illaway.
Aye.
Yagi.
Aye.
Jorgensen.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Lockhart.
Aye.
Lubnow.
Aye.
Madden. Madden. McKim.
Aye.
McComey.
Aye.
Mercer.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Miller.
No.
Millen.
Aye.
Moniz.
Aye.
Patton.
Aye.
Peasley.
No.
Pedersen.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Philp.
Aye.
Korberg.
Aye.
Roscoe.
Aye.
Semlick.
Aye.
Shepperson excused. Stewart.
Aye.
Stubson.
Aye.
Teeters.
No.
Thompson.
Aye.
Throne.
Aye.
Wallace.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? Teeters?
No to aye. Oh, excuse me.
The vote is closed. 54 ayes, 5 noes, 1 excused.
By your vote, you have adopted Joint Conference Committee number one report to House Bill 1.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Zwanitzer.
Could I have a privilege of the floor?
Do that. Yes, please proceed.
Members of the legislature in the West Gallery behind me is one of my favorite constituents, Carrie Klein, as well as three Cub Scouts who are starting a new pack here in Cheyenne. So if you'd make them all feel very welcome to be here.
Hey!
Mr. Speaker.
Welcome to the House, folks. Representative Edmonds, you may.
Just to add on to that, Carrie, just to give her one more accolade, Carrie is the president of the proposed charter school here in Cheyenne, Cheyenne Classical Academy.
Great. Representative Childers, you may have privilege of the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just wanted to remind everybody, the ladies and gentlemen and senoritas, the Wyoming Capital Club invites you to attend the terrace party tonight at the Holiday Inn, 5:30 to whenever. Great food, friends and fun, dinner, drinks, and door prizes.
We are at that order of business of reading and signing of enrolled acts.
House Enrolled Act being number 90.
Mr. Reading Clerk, I guess we aren't at that order of business. Chairman Berger.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd just be remiss if I didn't thank my conference committee and my appropriations committee. So if you would just stand, Representative Buchanan, Philp, Patterson, Jorgensen, Hammonds, Harshman, and Stewart. I want to thank you all for all your hard work. Thank you.
Mr. Speaker Pro Tem.
Well, Mr. Speaker, Representative Berger really didn't have very hard shoes to fill, but she has done a wonderful job as Madam Chairman of the Appropriations Committee and Chairman of the Joint Conference Committee, and I'd just like everybody to give her a big hand.
I would echo all of those settlements and sentiments. I would echo all of those sentiments and thank you again for your hard work. You did a nice job, and we look forward to your continuing work this summer. I'm sure you'll have a little more work than you normally would, and it'll be an interesting year. We are now at that order of business of signing of enrolled acts. The reading clerk will read the enrolled act.
House Enrolled Act number 90 being original House Bill 190, an act relating to suspension of driver's license for non-payment of child support, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 90 being original House Bill number 190. I have so signed.
House Enrolled Act number 91 being original House Bill number 46, an act relating to the National Guard, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 91 being original House Bill number 46. I have so signed.
House Enrolled Act number 92 being original House Bill number 54, an act relating to Workers' Compensation Act, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 92 being original House Bill number 54. I have so signed.
House Enrolled Act number 93 being original House Bill number 127, an act relating to general revision of laws, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 93 being original House Bill number 127. I have so signed.
House Enrolled Act number 94 being original House Bill number 146, an act relating to emergency medical services, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign original House Enrolled Act number 94 being original House Bill number 146. I have so signed.
House Enrolled Act number 95 being original House Bill number 169, an act relating to mortgage loan originators, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 95 being original House Bill number 169. I have so signed.
House Enrolled Act number 96 being original House Bill 177, an act relating to the Board of Dental Examiners, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 96 being original House Bill number 177. I have so signed.
House Enrolled Act number 97 being original House Bill 213, an act relating to conservation districts, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 97 being original House Bill number 213. I have so signed.
House Enrolled Act number 98 being original House Bill 286, an act relating to the Federal Natural Resource Policy Account, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 98 being original House Bill number 268. I have so signed.
House Enrolled Act number 99 being original House Bill 295, an act relating to the Western States Energy and Environment Symposium, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 99 being original House Bill number 295. I have so signed.
House Enrolled Act number 100 being original House Bill 73, an act relating to crime victims, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 100 being original House Bill number 73. I have so signed.
House Enrolled Act number 101 being original House Bill 162, an act relating to state employee retirement, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
About to sign House Enrolled Act number 101 being original House Bill number 162. I have so signed.
House Enrolled Act number 102 being original House Bill 267, an act relating to commercial motor vehicles, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
About to sign House Enrolled Act number 102 being original House Bill number 267. I have so signed.
House Enrolled Act Number 103 being original House Bill Number 174, an act relating to the Hathaway Student Scholarship Program being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act Number 103 being original House Bill Number 174. I have so signed.
House Enrolled Joint Resolution Number 3 being original Joint Resolution Number 7, a joint resolution to repeal requests made to Congress to call a convention for the purpose of proposing amendments to the Constitution of the United States, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Joint Resolution Number 3 being original House Joint Resolution Number 7. I have so signed.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 66 being original Senate File 49, an act relating to the Wyoming State Board of Psychology, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 66 being original Senate File Number 49. I have so signed.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 67 being original Senate File 94, an act relating to campaign finance, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 67 being original Senate File Number 94. I have so signed.
Senate Enrolled Act being original Senate File 129, an act relating to juveniles, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 68 being original Senate File Number 129. I have so signed. What do we have? Messages from the Senate.
Message 476, Mr. Speaker. The President appointed Senate conferees to meet with the like committee, number 2, in being a free committee from the House on Amendments to Senate File 103. The Senate conferees are Senator Ross, Chairman, Senator DiCaria, Senator Perkins, signed Diana Williams, and Senate Chief Clerk. Message 477, Mr. Speaker, the Senate did concur on House amendments to the bills listed below by the vote indicated. Senate File 107, Court Supervised Treatment Program Acts. Ayes 23, no 7, signed Diana Williams, and Senate Chief Clerk. Message 478, Mr. Speaker, the Senate did concur on House amendments to the bills listed below by the vote indicated. Senate File 93, Oral Health Initiative. Ayes 26, no's 4, signed Diane Williams and Senate Chief Clerk. Message 479, Mr. Speaker, the Senate did concur on House amendments to bills listed below by the vote indicated. Senate File 89, Fallen Heroes Endowments. Ayes 30, no 0, signed Diana Williams and Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 480. Mr. Speaker, House Bill 1, General Government Appropriations. The Senate adopted the Joint Conference Committee number 1 report on the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 25, noes 5, signed Diana Williams and Senate Chief Clerk. Message 481. Mr. Speaker, Senate File 53, Property Tax Deferral Program. The Senate adopted the Joint Conference Committee number 2 on the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 27, noes 3, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Committee announcements. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
First, I need to announce that the conference committee on Senate File 84 will meet in S1 upon adjournment today.
That still clears it. Oh, okay. Chairman Landon.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 10, Labor, is going to meet tomorrow afternoon upon adjournment, either in H17 or in 302, to have a long-distance telephone call with the medical review panel administrator and get an update on how that's working.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your conference committee will meet at 9:30 in the Senate Education to continue discussions on Senate File 47.
Any other announcements? Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk, I think.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that the House adjourn until Wednesday, March 4th, 2009 at 10 a.m.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. We are adjourned until tomorrow morning at 10 a.m.